You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Welcome back to Dear Science. And again, we've got Alan Blackman joining us live in the studio, which it obviously makes for better sound quality compared to when we're doing it from home. So at least you've got that going for us at the moment.
Amen. And just to mention, all the back episodes of Dear Science are on the website.
Yes. Exactly. 95bfm.com if you haven't checked it out.
For sure. Just a cheeky plug, as usual. So we've got some exciting stuff today. The first topic that we've got is asteroids. So, you know, you see them in very awful action films all the time. But we've recently been able to, well, I say we, not me personally,
well,
but
humankind.
Humankind has made some big steps in that we found some a way to get samples of asteroids and find out what they're made of. Mm. So tell us more about that.
Yep. No, that's very, very cool. So I guess the first question is, what are asteroids? Mm. And so they have another name. They're called minor planets. So they're little chunks, or indeed quite big chunks of rock that are floating around in space. They generally live between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. There's a big thing called the asteroid belt there. Right. And the biggest asteroid is a minor planet called Ceres, and that's around about 1,000 kilometers in diameter. So for comparison's sake, the moon is around about 3,500 kilometers in diameter. Wow. And Pluto is about 2,400 kilometers in diameter. So the moon's actually bigger than Pluto. There we go. Everyone's learned something today. There we go. So getting back to asteroids, not trying to get sidetracked here. So basically people want to know what asteroids are made of, obviously. And so some very enterprising scientists in Japan managed to send a probe up in the year 2010, and this was called Hayabusa. And what they managed to do was to land this, in fact, on an asteroid, pick up a sample of the asteroid itself, and bring it back to Earth, which is really, when you think about it, pretty bloody amazing. Mm-hmm. Quite astonishing stuff. And so they have just repeated this. And so in 2018, Hayabusa 2 landed on a minor planet or an asteroid called the snappy name 25143 Itokawa. Oh, sorry, wrong one. It's 162173 Ryukyu. Sorry, got that wrong.
In case you wanted to Google it, that's
the
one.
Absolutely. And so that landed on an asteroid in 2018, on that particular asteroid, and it came back to Earth in December 2020. So they landed it out in the outback in Australia. Mm. Pretty much all of the actual spacecraft itself burned up, but the container that was holding this precious cargo managed to survive. And it didn't go above sort of 60 degrees, apparently, which is fabulous. And they found it. They got a whopping great 5 grams of sample from this asteroid.
Wow.
And this 5 grams of material is probably the most valuable material on the planet when you think of the number of dollars that it took to get this 5 grams of stuff. And so since December 2020, they have been analysing this, and they've just published the results of their analysis in 3 papers, in fact, and it's probably 3 of many, I would guess, where they're looking at what this meteorite, or what, sorry, not meteorite, getting ahead of myself, what this asteroid is made of. Now, why the interest? Okay, so I mentioned meteorites there. So meteorites are these things that you know, if you're really lucky, you sometimes see in the sky at night, you know, big trail of light, etc., etc. So they are basically, you know, little bits of rock, remains of asteroids, whatever, that are coming through the Earth's atmosphere and burning up. Now, what we know about asteroids is that about 75% of them are very, very, very rich in carbon, okay? And so they've got these organic molecules, they've got amino acids, and some people think that life on Earth may have started because these asteroids brought these particular molecules to planet Earth, and they made it, and they survived re-entry, right, and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in terms of meteorites, which are derived from asteroids, only about 5% of those meteorites are found to be high in carbon. And so that's been a query, or a question that they've been asking for many years now. So why the lack of meteorites that contain a lot of carbon. Well, they basically think they've got the answer now because they've analysed this asteroid material. They've found it's very, very, very fragile, very, very porous, and they say it sort of resembles a clay. And basically, simple answer is that it doesn't survive re-entry. So it's that porous, it's that brittle, whatever, that basically most of these things burn up in the atmosphere. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So simple answer to a relatively complex question, I guess. But I guess watch this space because lots more will be done on these samples. They have yet to do the chemical analysis and stuff like that, so they're really only looking at the bulk outside of these things at the moment, but there'll be lots more to come. So, you know, fabulous stuff, really
amazing,
really amazing. And if you go on online, you'll see the actual spacecraft itself actually colliding with the asteroid and sort of bouncing back up, because they wanted not only to get a surface sample, but they wanted to get something under the surface.
Oh,
so basically,
oh, wow.
that involved
like
going
grabbed
boom.
It.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Incredible.
Like one of those claw machines, like. somebody's texting saying, "Is this like the movie Don't Look Up, where people want to mine precious materials from meteors?" Has anybody seen Don't Look Up? I haven't. I know it's about meteors.
I've watched the first third, so thanks for spoiling that one for me.
Well, it's definitely about it. Yeah. Yeah, perhaps.
Well, I mean, people have said this, that, you know, there could be valuable minerals out there and go mining on the moon and everything. Oh, good grief. No, not a great idea, really, is it?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
it?
The
no.
movie is a satire, but it could be very accurate.
Yeah.
In that case.
Yeah.
And on to our second topic, which is also about space.
Yep.
The James Webb Space Telescope has taken its first photos, including a selfie. And I don't know how to explain this because that's just kind of bizarre. It's a telescope just taking a selfie. But what's going on there?
Well, it was launched, the James Webb Telescope, as essentially the successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, which is coming sadly to the end of its useful life and has done amazing things and there's amazing photos out there. But this one's going to be even better. So this one's going to be able to see essentially further back into the past. So all the way back towards the Big Bang, some sort of 13.8 billion years ago. So all of the radiation that came from that, it's still sort of out there, you know, and it's travelling towards Earth, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a matter of being able to see that. So hopefully this new James Webb telescope will be able to do that. So it was launched on Christmas Day last year, and now it is in place. It's all basically set to go. So it's in a special spot called the Lagrange Point 2.
Ooh. I love all these numbers in these space. All of these space things are like, this one.
The physicists will know all about Lagrange points, but essentially it's a point in space where all of the gravitational fields of the sun and the Earth are in the right position for this thing to sort of orbit in a relative constant position compared to those two things, essentially.
That's got to be really precise.
Yeah. And so this thing, if you've seen a photo of it, it's got 18 mirrors. So these big hexagonal gold covered by the look of the mirrors. And so the first photos that have come through from this are in fact 18 photos of the same thing. So they're just an out of focus, fuzzy white blob of a star that is in the constellation Ursa Major, or the Great Bear. And you might think, well, that doesn't look very good. Well, they're absolutely wrapped with it, because now what this allows them to do is to align the mirrors so that these 18 fuzzy blobs are all focused into the one single, beautifully clear blob, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's basically the guts of it. So there's going to be plenty more from this. This is going to, there's going to be fantastic discoveries come from this particular piece of apparatus. It's going to be quite extraordinary. So it's going to start operation, I think they said about 6 months operation for real and stuff like that, but at the moment it's just fine tuning, getting it all in focus, etc., etc., and then watch the space. Amazing stuff.
And so, sorry, just to go to the selfie point, I don't know whether I missed that. Did it take a photo of itself?
It took a photo of itself, which they didn't think was possible because there wasn't enough light, supposedly, to be able to take a photo of itself. But indeed there was. So they were absolutely rapt about that as well.
Exciting stuff.
Great. Yeah. Selfies, you know, working towards science, scientific discoveries. Who would have thought?
I know.
That's exciting news as well.
Yeah.
And finally, this one's a little bit a bit of a pivot, new science is
are we going to call this science?
Science, and we say that in the air quotes. There are possibly some positive correlations between personality traits and the kind of music that people dominant in these traits listen to.
How can you determine that? Isn't personality traits something that's subjective anyway?
There's the question. Okay, so you go to the website of the study, and you're affronted by two quotes. Okay, these are worth reading out. So, those with neurotic traits in the USA are as likely to be into Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit as people with a similar personality living in Denmark or South Africa. Waha! Even better, I like this, it does not matter where a conscientious person lives, they are unlikely to enjoy Rage Against the Machine. Well, colour me conscientious. There you go.
To say, like, what sort of person would describe their own personality trait as neurotic? It's like, so in my personality, I feel like I'm quite a neurotic person, that's why I like Nirvana.
Yes,
like, what?
Isn't it based on like the big five of personality traits that have been scientifically proven?
Well, careful with that.
Yeah. Again, in air quotes. Yeah.
This isn't chemistry that we're talking about.
No. Fair enough.
So, a fellow by the name of Dr. David Greenberg, who is at Cambridge University and also associated with the University in Israel. So 350,000 participants from all around the world, from 50 countries, greater than 50 countries.
That's a lot of people.
Basically, they are all, as you say, self-picking their personality types. Mm. So, and then they get to listen to 25 pieces of music and rate whether they like it extremely, whether they hate it extremely, or a whole lot of variations in between. And on the basis of that, he has come up with these supposed correlations. Okay, so if apparently you are an extrovert or display extroversion, should we say, you like contemporary music. There seems to be a correlation with that. And contemporary music, apparently rap, electronica, Latin, and Europop.
Mm-hmm, right.
If you're a conscientious person, you like unpretentious music. I like this.
Right. Unpretentious.
What music is unpretentious? Country music. There we go.
Of course.
Which reminds me of the wonderful Bob Newhart quote, where he said that he doesn't like country music, and he doesn't mean to denigrate those that do. And denigrate means to put down.
Dear, oh dear. Are you a conscientious person out there listening that likes country music? Yeah. Text us in, 5395. Yeah, yeah.
If you're an agreeable person, you apparently like mellow and unpretentious music. So that means you like soft rock, R&B, adult contemporary, and country.
Mm.
I don't think anybody likes all of those. But anyway. No.
Maybe if you are like really agreeable, people just ask you if you like country.
Yeah.
You're like, love it.
Yeah. And apparently if you're a very open person, then you like mellow, contemporary, intense, and sophisticated music, which is pretty much everything, apparently. Mm. Now, as you might guess, I've got problems with this.
So I took
the test myself.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, okay, so this is a real scientific endeavor, mm-hmm, or whatever, pseudo, whatever. And took the test, and as you do, you rank yourself in terms of your personality, and then you listen to these 25 pieces of music. And then you're all set for the results, and they give you the sort of vague results, and then you click on the next one and it says, for only $9.99, you can get your e-report. And I thought, right, that's not real. This is not real academia. Man. This is not.
Mm. About as scientific as a multi-level marketing scheme.
I just feel, for me, all of that is very subjective, right? I feel talking about personality traits is a subjective thing, because how you interpret yourself, mm-hmm, is very different to how other people interpret you.
Absolutely.
Or like, perceive you.
Yep.
And then music is so subjective.
Yes.
Like, how on earth could you say some music is pretentious and some isn't without that being dependent on who the person is determining whether a piece of music is pretentious?
What if someone's listening to BFM right now going, am I pretentious?
Cool. Yeah. So do I like mellow music?
You can go and check that out if you so want to, but oh gosh, you're just adding to the 350,000 participants and probably advancing this guy's academic career. So,
I don't know. Leave it alone.
Possibly for the best.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for Day Science Day. Thanks again, Alan.
Okay, see ya.
Well,
I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.